Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. We have some new equipment in the studio today, so the very first show off of the old stuff. So if we have a few hiccups along the way, that will be the reason. This show will replay on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, and then again next Thursday night, as I will be out of town actually speaking at a conference, a little educational workshop over in the great state of Illinois, but I'll be back in studio live the following Saturday. So a lot of stuff happening for the next couple weeks. I talked about the possibility of having Mary Beth Franklin, the contributing editor of Investment News, on this week. Finally got a good connection with Mary Beth going on, and we have finally sealed the deal. She'll be on late September. I think it's like September 24th, so look forward to that. But we'll have a lot of great shows between now and then. Hey, let's talk a little news of the week, of course, brought to you by our new book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource for adults ages 50 and older. Really getting some traction with the book. There's been a lot of people that have picked it up. They've read through it. They've asked me about some things, the stories that are in it. So again, if you'd like to check it out, go on to any major online retailer and grab it. It's like $16, or you can get an e-version for $3 or $4. Here we go. The stock market's Fed fever is only going to get worse. In less than a month, the fate of the free world will hang in the balance, at least if you judge this based on the nerves of the Wall Street and what you hear in the popular media. But on September 17th, the Fed will decide whether or not to raise interest rates, which have been at zero for 8 years. This is all according to the Financial Times. Every economic data point, every comment from the Fed officials, every word, every official statement, it's deconstructed, reassembled, and synthesized for clues on what's to come. On Wednesday, they released their open market committee meeting minutes, and they were a little more dovish than a lot of people expected, so traders are now more confused than ever. Just as the September liftoff was beginning to look like a sure thing, things are now on a knife's edge. The takeaway from the release, the Fed's worried about the downside risk to the economic outlook, risk associated with tightening too soon, and evidence that inflation is going to stay low. As a result, the futures market have now pushed back expectations for the first rate hike since 2006 from September all the way to December. I found this interesting from By the Numbers. It talks about millennials. Now, these are the folks that were born, there's like 75 million of them. They're between the ages of 18 and 34, where they say that 64% of them believe they have a greater chance of winning the lottery than ever receiving a penny from Social Security during their retirement years. I read a piece in USA Today once in the corner, the little sometimes they have the little snippets down at the bottom, and it said that more people believed in aliens than they believed that Social Security would be for them. There's also something else interesting from By the Numbers. In the details, the devil is certainly in the details when it comes to the unemployment rate. In July, the unemployment rate was 5.3%, the lowest since April of 2008. The nation's July 2015 participation rate, however, 62.6%. That's the number of Americans either working or looking for work as a percentage of the people that can work or want to work. So that's the lowest since October of 1977. That's according to the Labor Department. And the Greeks, they agreed in principle back on August 11th to a 86 billion euro bailout. The first tranche of the new bailout funds would allow Greece to pay back the ECB 3.2 billion euros that's due on the 20th, that were due on the 20th of August. And then we turn around and see that their prime minister resigned on Thursday, hoping to strengthen his hold of power in what they're calling a snap election after several months in office, in which he fought Greece creditors for a better bailout, but had to cave in eventually. I think he's hoping to get reelected in the snap election, which seems like a complete mess to me. And then finally, I saw on Yahoo, because, you know, the town is now back to its zoo-like status with the freshmen in and all the students getting back to it. One-way streets, people going the wrong way on, all of that good stuff. But I read in Yahoo Finance today that 86% of all the good jobs in America are still going out to college graduates, and I think it's still worth the investment. So, hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Brian Bell. He is a Medicare guy, or he's an insurance guy, an insurance expert. And we're going to be talking about Medicare. You know, a lot of folks that are moving into that age of 65 and have to make some decisions. So we're going to be talking about that later on in the program. We'll also be talking about those folks that are not of Medicare age but just need good old-fashioned health insurance. And then later on, Mike Fidler, also another insurance expert, will be talking about long-term care, who needs it, how you pay for it, all that today on Your Money with David Hayes. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. As you approach retirement, as you approach the age of 65, then you have to make some choices. You are forced to make some choices, but then you make choices of what you're going to do when it comes to health care. Even though your Social Security age might be full age of 66 or 67, when it comes to Medicare, it's still the good old-fashioned age of 65. Brian Bell joins me live in the studio, local insurance professional and a specialist in these areas of health insurance. And Brian, I know that as people approach the scary time of their life, they get a little confused because now it becomes alphabet soup for in many ways, because you have Medicare A and then you have Medicare B and they have all these the supplements and drug plans. I thought we'd take just a second and make it really simple for them. Just what is Medicare and what are the different parts?
The first thing to talk about, David, is that you're right about the age 65, but if they're still working, they can stay on their employer-sponsored group health plan. So some people don't have to deal with all this until they come off of that. Mm-hmm. And we have a number of people who will ultimately get on a Medicare supplement in the age of 70 or even older.
Yeah, so, yeah. I had my neighbor recently said, hey, I've announced my retirement. I'm taking early retirement at 73.
Exactly. So, but with regard to the alphabet soup, you know, everyone is basically qualifies for Part A as they pay into the system during their working years, and that's the hospital coverage. Part B is outpatient doctor's office visits, which is a premium of roughly $105 a month deducted from your Social Security.
Yeah, and if you're not on Social Security, they'll send you a bill for that.
They sure
will. So Medicare Part A, 65, just automatically you become enrolled at that time? You don't have to do anything?
You really don't. You'll get a letter from Social Security and your red, white, and blue Medicare card that will pretty much enroll you.
But as far as Medicare Part B goes, that is an enrollment process.
Some people seem to, it differs a little bit. Some people get it automatically, and others have to make a trip down to the Social Security office.
Yeah, or you can go on SSA.gov and sign up for Medicare Part B there as well. So that takes care of the big boys, the hospitalization, the doctor visits, outpatient stuff. But then the stuff that Medicare doesn't pay, that's when they have to make some choices.
Exactly. And a lot of people refer to that plan of insurance as a Medicare supplement. Medicare actually refers to it as a Medigap policy.
And what are those policies cover?
They basically cover everything that Medicare doesn't, for the most part. There are a few things that are left out, but the one thing that you have to remember is that Medicare is the ultimate authority with regard to this, and so if they don't authorize it, then no one's going to pay for it.
And there's a lot of plans to pick from, but they're fairly regulated, so company to company, not a lot of differences in the general coverage, but when you get down to the details, there might be some differences?
Subtle differences, and you always find differences with regard to the price. Some carriers have an appetite for a certain market and others don't. One thing that will cost you a little bit more money is if you're a little bit older or if you're a smoker.
So as far as qualification goes, it's a guaranteed issue as long as they do it within a certain time frame?
Yeah, your initial election for a Medicare supplement or Medigap policy is guaranteed issue, and you can change it down the road, but you might have to answer a couple medical questions.
And the time period, is it around like 3 months before and 3 months after?
Exactly.
You turn 65. What kind of cost can a person expect to pay? I mean, we've covered Medicare Part B at about $105 a month, but when it comes to supplements, what can a person expect to need to budget for?
Well, there's a difference between a male and a female. The women get the coverage a little bit cheaper than the men. They're typically in better shape than we are.
Yeah.
So, a male 65 can expect to pay, from $80 to maybe $180 for a policy like that. And I'd say his premium will increase 10 to 15% if he's a smoker.
What about prescription drugs?
Prescription drugs, again, part of the alphabet soup, is referred to as Part D. Medicare does not cover it. You need to buy that coverage on your own, and you can get an effective plan probably from anywhere from $16 to $70 a month.
So as far as Medicare Part B, you're in for $105, and then another $80 to $100, let's say, for the supplement, another $50 for the drug plan. So you're at $260, $270 all in.
And
I'm sure that'll stay exactly the same for their entire life, right?
Well, the one thing that you and I are fans of is telling people to stay tuned and pay attention.
Yeah, those things are going to go up, folks. I can assure you of that. Let's take a second, Brian, and talk a little bit about, you mentioned the people that are still working, but what about someone that's maybe not quite Medicare age, 65, but they decide we're going to maybe retire, maybe it was their choice, maybe not. and they're 60 or 61 or 62, what kind of options do they have to bridge that gap before they get Medicare eligible?
They've got several options. The first option, you need to check with your human resources department, with your employer, and see if you can go on COBRA, which will basically extend your existing coverage, and you'll be paying the full cost for it. So it's going to cost you quite a bit more, but you'll be able to do that for about a year and a half. And then you can look at individual health plans or some of the short-term medical plans, which have become very, very popular.
Yeah, when we just talked to someone who wasn't even close to Medicare age but was just between jobs, and you were able to off-air help them understand that, hey, this is not going to cost $1,000 a month. You're 40 years old, and maybe a couple $100 to get you by to the next thing. Brian, we're going to take a break. When we come back, open enrollment is coming up pretty soon, and to me, it's a little bit confusing because everyone now has to have health insurance in America. Otherwise, you get penalized. But then also, folks that are on Medicare and they have a Medicare supplement plan, I feel like there's some kind of a tie-in there for them, too. So when we come back, we're going to be talking to Brian Bell, local insurance expert, on this topic of Medicare, Medicare supplements, and bridge coverage. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Fidelity did some recent research on the amount of money people spend on healthcare in retirement, and it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it's a very serious topic. It's something that financial professionals have done a very poor job of helping clients plan for. And that's why we're hopefully bringing this information to you today so that you can be prepared for it when it comes to retirement. Brian Bell is with me, and we're talking about health insurance. We talked about Medicare and Medicare supplements earlier, but when we talk about just health insurance in general, we're coming upon the season of what's known as open enrollment for individual health, and then also there's something as far as Medicare gap coverage goes as well. Brian, walk us through what is coming up and if people need to do anything at all.
There's a lot coming up. If you are still working, you probably have a November deadline, maybe December deadline of making some benefit changes at your plan through work. If you're looking for individual health insurance, we have the open enrollment period, which this year, it's changed every year since the implementation of the Affordable Care Act.
How convenient.
This year, yeah, exactly. And so this year it's from November 1st through January 31st. And then the annual election period for people who are making some changes with regard to either their prescription drug plans or maybe a Medicare Advantage plan can do that between October 15th and December 7th.
So what does this mean for the non-Medicare folks, prescription drug plans, the regular everyday guy? You're saying from, did you say November 1st through January 31st?
That's right.
So what does that mean for someone?
If you want to make a change or you don't currently have coverage, you need to get it, you need to make an application and get the coverage in force at that point in time.
They don't need to go to the health insurance exchange necessarily. They can buy coverage through an independent agent as well?
That's correct. And whether or not you're receiving a supplement from the government or not and going through the exchange, you still need to get the coverage, as we know, has been mandated by the Affordable Care Act, and it has to be done during this 3-month period.
Yeah, and I still do a handful of tax returns every year, and the one question that popped up on the TurboTax this year was, did everyone in your household have I don't remember the word, but it basically compliant type coverage, and you check yes and you move on. But I also did a few returns for people who received a supplement, and you have to put all that information in. It's pretty complex. So if you are getting a supplement, do you have to go through the exchange?
Yes, you do. You have to buy a plan that's basically, you know, covered, offered through the exchange, but you can do that through an insurance professional as well.
So let's talk about the prescription drug plans for people on Medicare. That enrollment period or optionality, or they have now the option to change around and give those dates again?
That's October 15th through December 7th.
So why would a person want to change if they have a, you know, coverage that they seem to like, it seems to be covering most things? Why would they want to take the time to try and do what no one wants to do, change?
Well, if they like the coverage and the premium is within their budget and they're happy with the coverage, I wouldn't recommend changing. But if things have changed in their life in terms of maybe some of the prescription medication they're taking or the premium's gone up, you may want to do a little shopping.
So when a person is, you know, they first sign up and they have a premium payment, each year it maybe incrementally goes up. I've noticed that occasionally after a year or two, you might be able to switch, whether it be a supplement plan or a prescription drug plan, and save some money. But that's just a general observation from someone that's not in the trenches every day. Is that a good observation? Is that something that you see people doing and picking up some savings?
people are doing it. The one factor that really works against you, I guess, would be that you're a little bit older. And so, as we all know, insurance gets a little more expensive when we're older. But you can make changes, and there's always new options that are coming onto the marketplace as well. So it's worth investigating.
So, folks, if you'd like to talk to someone that knows about this stuff, I always give Brian a call. You can contact him through our office. We'll give you his contact information. Go to cfci.us. That's cfci.us. Contact us and just say, hey, I want to talk to that insurance guy, and we'll make sure we know which one you're talking about, so you don't have to remember. Although the name Brian is not that difficult to remember. It's kind of like David. It's pretty easy. Brian's been my guest, and we've been talking about health insurance. If you missed the segment, you can always listen to it on Saturday mornings at 9 or, again, on Thursday of next week, because I'll be out of town. But then don't worry. We'll be back for a live edition of Your Money with David Hayes on a Saturday morning that follows next week. We actually are going to take a little bit of an early break because I want to take a lot of time to talk about the next topic, which is long-term care. You know, people are worried about this, and you should be. Home health care, assisted living, or a full-blown skilled facility known as nursing homes for most of us. And, you know, we just got done talking about Medicare, Brian, and a lot of people really believe that Medicare is going to pay for this. But, folks, the answer is no, it won't pay for this. In very, very rare circumstances, we'll even pay for a few days, I mean, up to maybe 100 days. We're going to have Mike Fidler on in just a few minutes. And then, yeah, will Medicaid pay for it? Yeah, it'll pay for it, but only if you're broke, and that's mainly for nursing homes only. So a lot to talk about, because I really want to dig into this. I want you to understand it. I want you to know who should be thinking about buying insurance and what different types there are available. So when we come back, we'll be joined by Mike Fidler, who is also an insurance expert. We're going to continue to use that word. I like the word expert. We're going to talk to Mike Fidler. Brian may hang around as well. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Going to talk to Mike Fidler as he joins us now live on the radio. Mikey, are you there?
Hello, David.
Hey,
Brian.
Mike. Appreciate you taking the time. We're going to be talking about long-term care, one of the topics that I know you're very passionate about in educating people and making sure that they're properly covered. But, you know, most people don't expect to need long-term care. Many do not have the sufficient cash to cover it if they do need it. And the need for and the price of long-term care continues to climb. You know, I saw a statistic here, Mike, that came out of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services that said 70% of people who turn age 65 can expect to use some form of long-term care during their lifetime. And, folks, there's 10,000 of them every day turning 65 in America. So this is a big deal, and people are worried about it. And, Mike, they should be, shouldn't they?
I agree, absolutely. The cost is what the real big deal is, David. You and I talked about this before. And in today's money, I just checked again today to make sure that my numbers would be close. If you were actually in the nursing home, or like they like to be called now, health campuses, and you were there under skilled care, you're looking at, on the backside of $80,000. So you have to have over $100,000 distribution from your savings, because you have to pay tax on that, of course, to be able to afford 1 year in the nursing home.
Yeah, you could blow through a lot of money really, really quick. Now, a lot of folks don't want to go to the nursing home, Mike. I want to stay home, or I want to go to an assisted living facility. And home health care, a lot of folks will say it's cheaper, but if it's 24-hour care, average cost in America, according to, according to Medicare, federal government health agency, says it's about $19 an hour. You do the math on that, it's pretty darn expensive to stay at home. But home care and assisted living, those are also very popular places, and assisted living is not going to be quite as much.
No, and you're right. There's about a third difference each time. So if it's 80 plus to go to the nursing home, it's going to be 50 to 60,000 range for assisted living. And then it's also going to be $20,000 to $30,000 for that home care, particularly if you have, like you said, 24-hour care, which is difficult at home at best.
Yeah, so it's expensive, folks. Now, the one thing, Mike, that's a myth out there for a lot of people, and in the years that we've taught the retirement readiness classes through Ivy Tech, we talk about Medicare, and folks say, well, won't Medicare pay for some of this? And the answer is no. And Medicaid will, but only if you're broke. But, in fact, Medicare will pay for some care for a very limited period of time.
Right. The trigger there is a three-night, and that's important, three nights in the hospital. And then the first 20 days of, we'll call it rehabilitation, that would be at a rehabilitation facility, Medicare will pick that up. Now, here's where the mystery begins. Day 21 to day 100, if you are still in rehab and improving, or in other words, accepting your rehabilitation and getting better, Medicare will pay for that. But there's a daily copay, and now it's close to $150 a day. So without the supplement that you purchased from Brian, okay, you're going to be out that money in rehab. The minute you don't want to rehab anymore or they deem you're not getting any better or improving, then you're going to be kicked out of that next 80-day period. As long as you're doing well in rehab, Medicare and your supplement will pick up day 21, if you will, to day 100. But then, David, you're right again, you're back to starting over.
You know, you mentioned the 3-day stay in the hospital is being very, very important. So, folks, if you're of this age and you're in the hospital for 2 days and they're going to send you to rehab at the nursing home, act like my cat who's going to the vet. Put your hands up against the door and say, "I'm not going anywhere." Stay that third day so they'll start to pick it up. Mike, let's talk about it. I mean, we talked about burning your cash down and, you know, you're going to have to pay for it. No one else is going to pay for it. But that's what insurance is for. Long-term care insurance, the traditional form, walk people through that and how to qualify, how much you see people actually needing to buy, and how much does it cost?
Well, it's expensive, David, really, at any year, and I say expensive. You know, I talked a lot about, too, whether or not you calculate and really need the coverage and use a specific product like long-term care, because long-term care insurance in its true form covers three issues. It covers that at-home care, mm-hmm. It covers the assisted living, and it covers the nursing home or health campus. It doesn't do anything else. There's no, I mean, unless you really pay a lot more for it, there's no premium refunding, there's no non-forfeiture options, and most people, once they see how much all those cost, they don't add those to a benefit anyway. But depending on how old you are, long-term care insurance per person can be anywhere from $3,000 a year to $12,000 a year. One thing that people need to know, too, most companies today have decided to make long-term care insurance gender distinct again, which means females are going to pay more for it than their same-age male counterpart. Now, couples do get a discount, and they have opened that up also now to domestic partners and same-sex marriages, which has been a real help in that regard. But it's expensive. We have to really make sure that that's what you need to do, and then we have to be able to find the money to pay for that. And I've just never been one to, I'll say, frighten someone into purchasing long-term care. I think it's more of one that we have to do that comprehensive approach to make sure that you need it, what it's going to cover. And I know you want to talk about partnerships, so I'll kind of just stay there that it's that easily that range, $3,000 to $12,000 per person.
Well, and anyone's ever heard me talk on the radio and in one-on-one meetings or in a public setting, and I talk about insurance, my view on insurance is to cover the things you cannot otherwise cover yourself or that you don't want to otherwise cover yourself. So if you take a look at the cost, let's say it's $60,000 or $80,000, whatever, you know, deduct the Social Security, deduct your pension, you know, look then how much is left over. Take the assets that you have, divide that by 20, let's say, and how much is that? Pretend like you're not going to make any money. And then use some inflation factors because costs are likely to go up. And then say, okay, that's my gap. Or maybe you don't need it at all. Maybe you have enough money to cover it. Maybe you want to buy insurance to preserve the legacy of your money for your family. So it's an individual choice whether or not you buy
Absolutely.
It. But I think a calculated choice is good. And you mentioned the partnership plan. Many, many years ago, Indiana was very progressive in coming out with this partnership plan. Explain a little bit about what the Indiana partnership plan is when it comes to long-term care.
Okay. Pardon me. The partnership plan was designed to help assist people to become eligible for Medicaid, protect their assets, and also protect the Indiana State Medicaid Bank, which was in the early 90s in dire straits.
I think so it still is, Mike, last time I checked.
Yeah, well, that's true. They designed a program that said if you purchase a certain size product, insurance contract. We'll call that a bucket of money, if you will. There's tons of different purchase agreements that you have to make, certain daily amounts and certain amount, that type of thing. But if you buy one that qualifies for long-term care, total asset protection, once you use up your contract, all of your assets are protected now against using them for continued long-term care services. But you mentioned Social Security and retirement. Pension, Social Security, certain dividends and interest payments still have to be made even once you run through either your own assets, which is a spend down, or you run through the insurance product. You still have to pay out of income, but you at least get to keep assets that might generate those that source of income.
Brian Bell has stuck around with us, Mike, and as we talk about, you know, long-term care insurance, you know, I know that not a lot of people buy it. They listen to it, the story, they think they might need it, but they can't get over this, well, if I don't use it, I've lost all that premium dollars. And folks, it's health insurance, so it's likely to go up in the future. It's not going to go down. If you ever needed it, it's the best thing you ever bought, no question about that.
Right.
But Mike,
right,
a lot of people are looking for alternative ways, and I'm going to include Brian in this discussion now, of ways to have an extra pot of money for long-term care if you need it. And one of them is annuity contracts. Annuity contracts,
right,
have been, and the insurance industry has been pretty progressive in this area. But as an example, I ran across one recently where if you put $100,000 on deposit, you get to invest it in a variety of sub-accounts. But they'll give you three times that when it comes to long-term care. So you'd have $300,000 of available money for long-term care. Now you might say, wow, that sounds too good to be true. I'll tell you, it's too good to be free. That costs you about 75 basis points on your money on top of the fund expenses, mortality expense. So you're going to pay 3.5% fees on your money, but you have $300,000 of long-term care. So, Mike, I guess as you look at this, and I call it non-committal way of insuring, because you can get that money back out. It's still your money. I see that as a pretty viable option for a lot of people.
Well, I agree with you, David. It is, because even though the probability of needing custodial care, and let's call it that, is very high, and even about four times more likely for women than it is for men, there's still no absolute guarantee that you're going to go. So the annuity is a good option. There are some hybrid life insurance contracts, because we know that one thing is absolutely for sure, and that is that we are going to die at some point in time. So
one in one chance, last time I checked.
Absolutely, one out of one. We're always right on that number. We may miss the market a percent or two, but we're always right on that one.
And I like the life insurance idea, and personally, that's the route that my wife and I have taken. You know, we're going to die, and either she'll get the money, or if I need it for long-term care, I can tap into it. And, Mike, the policy that I bought at certain ages, I think at 85 or 86 years old, it would allow me to accelerate about 80 to 85% of my death benefit for the use of long-term care. So if I have a $1 million contract, I could accelerate $850,000 of tax-free dollars to pay for long-term care. It just reduces my death benefit and good to go. So for me, I'm covered. It's good coverage while I'm young, you know, with a family. It's good coverage later on for legacy or for long-term care. I'm a huge fan of this because, like you said, it's a money-back guarantee that you're going to die and get that money back. Brian was mentioning that early dollar contracts are starting to gain some traction as well.
We're calling them short-term care. And so basically, I'm a fan of, as you are, something is better than nothing. So if you can't afford the full-blown long-term care policy but want to cover that rehabilitation period after your Medicare supplement or some other coverage that you might have, this could be a great way to bridge the gap.
Yeah, I know some folks that could sure use an extra $50,000 or $100,000 because, you know, the average of stay or the average length of long-term care I've read is about 3 to 4 years. So if you're staying at home and you've burnt through your dollars, if you had another $50,000 or so, you could stay there and not have to go to the nursing home. So, Mike, we appreciate it. We're going to stick around, keep you around, because we're going to go to questions of the week, all kinds of questions, and one and a couple right out of the gate. I've smoked for nearly, we're gonna take a break after this, but I've smoked for nearly 5 years, or I have not smoked, I'm sorry, for nearly 5 years, and I was told I could get a non-smoker rate for my life insurance policy that I just applied for. They're now telling this person they're a smoker because they use the electronic cigarettes. And they're saying, is that right? Do all companies look at it that way? We have that question from Mike and more. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. You know, if you want to just talk with someone about this topic of insurance and long-term care, shoot us an email, cfci.us. Contact us. I'd like to talk to someone. We'll set up a phone conference with you and Brian or Mike and or even myself and kind of talk you through some of these ideas and connect you with them so that they can put you in the proper product. So make sure you do that. Don't just let this information go in one ear and out the other, not do anything about it. You know, Brian and I were talking off air, Mike, and I said, you know, every 60-year-old person out there should probably, who has any assets at all, any income, and any dignity that they want to maintain, should consider and buy some type of long-term care coverage. Almost everybody. So, Mikey, we're talking about long-term care. You know, and a lot of times people say, well, what triggers a claim? And I think that's the next step is whenever what triggers a claim? And it's when you cannot perform, for the most part, two of your six activities of daily living. What does that mean?
Well, that means hopefully what the three of us did when we got up this morning, we were able to bathe ourselves, we were able to get dressed, we ate, we were able to, they call it transferring, that's being able to motivate around on your own, that's without the assistance of a wheelchair or a cane or someone else to help you, and also toileting and continence. To me, toileting is... continence is being able to hold it long enough to get to the bathroom. That's mm-hmm. kind of what that really means. So being able to control your bladder or your bowels to be able to do those things. So those are all activities of daily living, and you lose any two of those, then you're going to need some type of assistance. That's a trigger for long-term care. It's a trigger for most of the policies that we've been talking about, alternate policies. One that we haven't mentioned is cognitive impairment, and that is either dementia or Alzheimer's. So,
and you just need that. You don't need dementia, Alzheimer's, and another activity of daily living. That kind of trumps it all. But unfortunately, when you have dementia and Alzheimer's, you usually have difficulties in some of those other areas. Mike, I had a funny meeting this week. It was a guy who's in his mid 50s, and I was talking to him about long-term care and how it works in two of the six ADLs. And he said, "What is this?" And I walked him through it kind of like you did. And he says, "Wait a second. I already have about four of those things. Why don't you start sending me the checks now?" I've heard you say that before too. All right, Mike, we've got questions of the week. A lot of them to get through here. Number one, what came from a person, I have not smoked for nearly 5 years. I was told I could get a non-smoker rate for life insurance I just applied for. But now they're telling me that I'm a smoker because I use electronic cigarettes. Is that right? Do all companies look at this the same way?
No, they don't. And that's the good thing about being able to talk with us, that we have such a huge marketplace for different products. There are a very specialized handful of major insurance carriers that will look at that as non-smoking rates. And, you know, this guy hasn't smoked a real cigarette for 5 years. If he is in good health otherwise, he may even be able to qualify for what they call preferred tobacco rates, okay, which is really somewhere between a standard non-tobacco rate. And he should try to do everything that he possibly can, okay, to seek out that type of a company, because that could make as much difference in a rate as 50% to 130% difference in a rate, David, depending on what type of product you bought.
Yeah, I actually did a little inquiry for him, and I know this company tests for nicotine. So they say, well, we don't know if he's smoking e-cigs or not because we just test for nicotine. And e-cigarettes are relatively new, so a lot of the older insurance companies haven't really adjusted to them quite yet. All right, next question, Mike. My mom is losing her memory for sure, but hasn't been officially diagnosed with anything like dementia or Alzheimer's. I'm thinking she needs to get something in place before she is. Will this be a problem? She's having come out of the application process because doctors... Okay, so basically, is she going to have trouble with the application process, or will this come out during that process because the doctors haven't... or that because the doctors have not diagnosed her? Basically, that's the question.
Right. Well, once you do...
I read it exactly as it was written, so it's not my fault that it sounded terrible. Well, so hopefully you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, sir, I do. Yeah, if she's already been diagnosed, we know that that's one of the gatekeeper questions. Now, it wouldn't necessarily keep her from being able to buy a life insurance contract, but it might preclude her from being able to purchase a long-term care rider.
So she may be able to buy one of the life, like I have, one of the life insurance policies with the critical illness rider that covers long-term care. Because I know traditional long-term care ask a lot of memory questions. I had a client one time, was actually interviewed by Kelly Green of the Wall Street Journal, and who thought the questions the company, and you remember this person, he thought the questions the company asked about fruits and vegetables was stupid, so he just said, I'm not answering those questions, and then, of course, they declined him. Annuities have a few knockout questions, mm-hmm. There were just a few, but that's not hard to get, and like you mentioned, life insurance. I know one company that you've used for the life insurance hybrid version, they don't ask any memory questions until the applicant is 69 years old. So like Mike said, there's a lot of insurance companies out there that have a lot of different rules. So if you get to someone like Mike or Brian and they know they're not tied in with one company, then they can go out and figure out the best thing for you. All right, Mikey, we're going to move on here. I'm not sure. These may be more questions for me. So, I want to just tell you thank you very much for taking the time, and I'm sure I'll see you soon, and we'll hear you again on the radio very soon.
I appreciate it very much. Thanks, David.
All right, thank you.
Nice to hear you too, Brian. Bye, guys.
Bye, Mike.
All right, we're going to continue on here. Actually, let's take a break right now, and we'll come back and wrap up with the last few questions. We have a person here that said, oh, that's a good question. I've maxed out my Social Security income for the last 32 years versus the 35 they used to calculate benefits. Thinking about retiring from my job and taking a part-time job instead, but he's a little bit worried that that might hurt his Social Security benefits down the road. So we'll have an answer to that and more. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Of course, Saturday morning at 9 o'clock is a great time to listen. And again, next Thursday night at 6, this show will be replayed again. And then I'll be back in the studio live for a Saturday morning edition. And we're going to be talking investments because a lot to talk about. All right, let's get back to the Q's of the week. I have maxed out my earnings for Social Security. So, folks, that's like when you make over like $116,000 a year or so. That's when you stop paying into Social Security. I think it's like 117 or 118 now. They've done it for the last 32 years. Congratulations. But versus the 35 years they used to calculate my benefit. Thinking about retiring early, leaving my job, taking a part-time job instead for the next few years before I hit the, quote, real retirement. So his question is, by leaving my higher-paying job, will that affect my Social Security? Well, I went online. I actually did two different scenarios because I didn't think it would, and I did it on SSA.gov. One estimate showing continuing to make what you make and one showing a much lower amount. And it only changed your benefits slightly, like a couple percent. So Social Security, they do use your highest 35 years to calculate your benefit. They adjust all the numbers by inflation so that they're the same. So in other words, $30,000 earned, let's say 1970, is worth about $90,000 in today's dollars. So my suggestion is go to the website, check it out. And if you're not going to make any money, just say, from now on, I'm going to make zero, and it will tell you exactly, well, not exactly, it's an estimate of what those benefits will be. Here we go. Here's another question. These actually both came from the same person. We thought they were so good, we'd put them both on. I know from what I've heard you say on the radio that if I'm 55 when I leave my job, I can get to my 401k without a penalty. That's exactly right. My question is, do I have to be 55 when I leave, or is it just the year that I turn 55? That's important because I turned 55 in March of 2016, but plan to leave my job in January of that year. I called my employer plan provider, and they can't give me a straight answer. So here's your answer. It is in the year that you turn 55, so you're fine. What makes this confusing is that IRA distributions are different. You have to be 59 and a half on the nose or after to access an IRA without the 10% penalty. I learned that one the hard way about 15 years ago before I had reliable information, like the technical consultants over at the Ed Slott IRA Advisor Group. I value those folks greatly. I remember back then calling a large, well-known investment firm like you did to get the answer. They gave me the wrong answer, and it ended up costing my client, and ultimately me, about $2,000, because, you know, it was my mistake, so I'm the one that had to pony up. So like I tell my now freshmen in high school, It's your job to know the rules and follow them. Oh, that's a good question. I like that one. Brian Bell's been hanging out with me. And Brian, this topic that we've been covering today on long-term care and health insurance, I know it's confusing. I know it's like taking a drink from a fire hydrant, but it's extremely important that people take the time, sit down, and figure this stuff out.
Absolutely. And I tell everyone that I meet with that there is some things that they need to do, and they need to investigate them and not just put it to bed once they've made an informed and intelligent decision. Stay tuned, because things are changing.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, we're here every single week to hopefully bring good information to you. You know, in a couple of weeks, Mary Beth Franklin, who's a friend of the show, is going to be on the show again, and she's been writing a lot about Medicare and the cost of health insurance for retirees. Of course, she's become famous for the Social Security claiming strategies and what's coming down the pipeline. She'll be on the 24th of September. Really looking forward to that. Nailed it down today. That's a big nail down for this show. You know, Mary Beth wrote a quote for the back of our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, and it was great. I appreciated it so much. You know what's interesting about that? You know, I've always read those on the back of books, and Ed Slott also gave me one. And have you ever thought, did they really write this? You know, or did they just put some stuff down and say that, you know, Harry or, you know, whoever, Harry Dent wrote it, or, I mean, think of Bill Clinton or George Bush. I mean, did they just make it up? Well, when you go to publish a book like we did, they verify that stuff. They actually sent a letter or a notice to Mary Beth Franklin, the contributing editor for Investment News, Ed Slott, the founder of IRAHelp.com and like the number one public television special in the country now. I think the Wall Street Journal calls him the country's IRA expert. And here, you know, Author House is sending them this little release. Can we really use it? I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? Do you have to bug him? Fortunately, they signed off, sent it back, and they're killer quotes are on the back of the book. So she'll be on the 24th. And I can tell you, Brian, planners have not done a good job of informing. And I think it's because we've not been very well informed on the real cost of health care as people age. It's just unbelievable.
Well, it's gone up so much that it's become a real significant issue. And it's not one that can be taken lightly or ignored.
You know, as we talk about Medicare A and B and supplements, and we get on to long-term care, you know, You've got to have some money, folks, to protect. So really, even if you're younger, these are important things. But I was talking with someone today about saving money in retirement, and they were doing a match. Then that match they thought was good enough. And I was like, you know what? There's a retirement crisis in America, folks. If you think that 3% match and 3% you're putting in is going to get you there, you got to put more money in, because you need something to insure and protect later on. Brian, thanks so much for hanging out with
me.
I hope everyone really enjoyed the show. Again, the replay Saturday morning at 9, next Thursday night, and then live again in the studio on Saturday morning. This has been Your Money with David Hayes. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.